The Double Up by Lee Morgan on trumpet. This is Utrecht Lead. You're listening to Lead Stories. One of those fast and furious days. I've had all kinds of prodding and poking done to me today at the doctor's office, but I survived. How about that? Thanks for tuning in and joining me on Lead Stories. A couple of things that I wanted to talk about and be catching up here. And that is, in the last couple of weeks, I've been examined, re-examined, cross-examined, all kinds of things, just to make sure that folks have an understanding or an idea of how I'm progressing. They seem to be in agreement that I'm progressing. The disease of cancer is a very interesting one because it changes all the time. And you have to be on top of things. You have to be so sensitive to what is going on with your body that sometimes you could miss a hint or two, and it could be pretty important if you miss it. But so far, knock wood, I'm doing okay. And I thank you for your inquiries and your best wishes. I really appreciate it. It is very encouraging. All right, so let's talk about what we're talking about today. What we're talking about today is your favorite governor. I have to say your favorite governor, because he's not my favorite governor, and that is Andrew Cuomo. We didn't get a chance to talk about what we think about this latest move, of course, declaring a heck of a mea culpa, taking blame for the craziness that he had been living for a while now, and then for the decisions that he made even within that. And now making the decision that he will leave office. And we say, okay. On the 24th of August, he's gone. Made this big thing about it. And, you know, the speech, he still wants to be in charge. He still wants people to think or to know that he's being very responsible, very grown up about being a governor who, of course, has been charged. Well, he hasn't officially been charged in that sense, but he has not denied that he has been sexually aggressive with several members of his staff. At least in 11 cases, they have found that his behavior was extremely aggressive. And he could deny it all he wants, but he had decided early on that he was just not going to be put out of office. Nobody was going to make him go. Well, we see that he has come to realize he's not going to win this fight. And so he decided that, okay, in as much as I have to go, let me be in charge of that decision, or at least appear to be in charge of that decision, a governor in charge, even when things are heading south for him. So now he is at the point of admitting that he's going to go. He's going to go. He just does not want to go, but in the interest of the public, means to the public, in the interest of all kinds of things, his behavior, he is, of course, the son of a former governor, well-known, Mario Cuomo. So he has a lot to do, a lot of patchwork to do, to make a reasonably clean exit. It's not a clean exit, let's be clear about that. But he's doing his best to make it look like, one, he has made the decision. Nobody has made the decision for him. Nobody's forcing him out of office. He's not going because he's been pressured to go. He's in charge. And number two, he is going to go with a long string of explanations from his perspective as to what it meant to be governor of the state, the great state of New York, and also as the son of Mario Cuomo. So he's doing all this to wrap it up nicely, to give himself an easy exit, easy-ish exit. And it is embarrassing. The longer he goes on with this nonsense, he should just, you know, make one speech and get out. Find a nice, quiet place to live and begin life anew as something else. We don't really know what. I personally don't care. But just go. But he is now in the process of torturing us before he goes, making speech after speech as if he's still a statesman. And he's doing, making an exit the way a statesman should make an exit. I don't know that it matters to you. It certainly doesn't matter to me, but it matters to him and to the so-called record. He is supplying his interpretation of history and his view of what has happened to him. In all of this, he's not admitting, really, that he's the reason he's leaving. Can't control himself. Making very bad decisions. Lying when caught. Trying to transfer blame to others. Basically, trying to diminish the seriousness of the charges that would attend once he's gone and has to answer for the court of law. And he's not doing a very good job, but he believes he is. And so, well, you know, at this point, just let him think whatever he wants to think, as long as he understands he's gone. On the 24th of August, he is out. The woman who served as Lieutenant Governor, Kathy Hochul, will now become the governor of the state of New York, and he will be a pungent question mark after he has left the office. We'll talk about that. And I want to ask you, because this has received a considerable amount of media attention, what do you think made him decide to fold up his tent and give up the governorship of the state of New York? What do you think caused him to realize that this is not something he could win? This is not a fight he could win. He should just go. And the advice given to him should have been, make it as quiet as possible. You do not want to stay in the spotlight too long. You make your statement and you go, and you pray that August the 24th comes around real fast. You're gone. You're finding a community, very, very quiet community, where you blend well with the trees and the grass and the road and whatever else there is, and you fashion some kind of life. Yeah, you've been the governor. You had contacts. You'll find a job. But get out and stop all this drama as you go. It's really annoying. So what do you think made him come to the conclusion that it makes sense? The only choice that he has at the moment is to just pack it in and go, and he should stop talking. We've heard enough from him, and we certainly have heard enough from the women that he allegedly victimized, and just let him go. You know, get out. Be a part of history, but be history. Go. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. What do you think, after all of this protestation, after all of this puffing of the chest and defiance, he comes to the conclusion that the best thing for him to do is to fold up his tent and get lost, still making speeches, self-serving speeches on the way out, and still insisting that there is another reality here, and we, the silly people of the world, we just don't know. We have no idea how wronged he is, but we will learn our lesson later on down the line. But in the meantime, because he's noble, and because he loves the state, and he loved being governor, and because he's the son of Mario Cuomo, who is the closest we have come to being governed by a true patrician, a true Roman patrician, he's going to make life easy. He's going to make the decision very easy and tolerable, and he is going to go. And we will just have to suffer the consequences of our rash decisions. And we'll just have to bear with the fact that we just didn't know the good thing we had while we had it. Patricia from New York gets us started today. Hello, Patricia, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, you Trace, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Before I make my comment, I just want to give you a little bit of levity. So my position on Cuomo is hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more,
no more.
I'm sorry about I don't have a vocal, but you get the message.
I got a message.
Yeah, I think he was like a weather vane. He took the temperature, and he realized he really had no support. You know, when you get into hot water, I mean, whether you're the governor or anybody, you have to figure out who's in your corner and where can you get some support from. And even if that support is tepid or lukewarm, if it's strong enough, you can weather the storm. Well, I think when Melissa DeRosa, who's been his long-term assistant over 10 years, I think when Melissa DeRosa resigned, I think he realized that time was up. Because as long as I can remember, it's been Melissa DeRosa, at least in terms of health and health care. Whenever we've had to have any discussions with the governor's office, it was always Melissa DeRosa that we had to communicate with if we wanted to get a message to him. And when she resigned, I think the writing was on the wall. It was just a matter of time. You know, I listened to his speech yesterday, and I said, you really have a lot of nerve. Even on your way out, you can't accept responsibility for what you did. You're doing this in the best interest of the state? You really are? I mean, all the corruption that surrounded him for years, his eliminating the Moreland Commission when it was getting too close to him, really? You're doing this for the best interest of the state? Serves you right.
So you have
just
no
go,
sympathy.
Just go.
And he will not be missed by you when he's gone.
Beg your pardon?
He will not be missed by you when he's gone.
Not only will he not be missed, the this is the one time I'm gonna caucus with the Republicans, because they want him to go through the impeachment process so he could never run for public office again. This is the one time I'm in their camp. You know that old saying, even once in a while, a dim bulb shines bright on a tree.
I can't believe that he was so confident that the idea of him gone would provoke such a deep sense of loss in the state of New York, that there would be some kind of sympathy extended toward him, and you know, some effort at the rapprochement as he leaves. And so, you know, there would be a kind of kiss and make up, and quite a few of his sins will be forgiven. But there's none of that.
Now, maybe I'm being cynical here, Utrice, but I suspect people are not really quite sure whether he's like a cat and he has nine lives. And maybe they don't want to burn their bridges just in case life number 10 comes back.
In your view, for the short time that he had tenure as governor, was he effective? Was he good for the state? Did he bring about a whole optimism in the state? People were thinking, well, okay, we're on the move.
It depends on who you talk to. So if I'm in the real estate industry, I'm in mourning today. Of course, he literally handed over the city and state of New York to real estate developers. If I'm in education and I'm a charter school supporter, I'm in mourning today, because he was literally trying to hand over the board of the education of black and brown children in New York to the private industry. So it depends on who you talk to.
Mm-hmm. What lesson, is there a lesson, let me ask it that way, is there a lesson to be learned here that we could say, well, we did derive one benefit, we did learn something from this governor, what would it be?
I'm sorry, but I can't think of anything I learned from this administration. It was one scandal after another that nobody wanted to deal with, because he was perceived to be so powerful that he, you know, almost like Trump, he could get away with anything. So I personally can't point to anything that the state of New York benefit, at least the community that I would represent, benefited from his tenure.
Well, thank you. So you will not be crying when that day comes in the not-too-distant future, the very near future, as a matter of fact, when he packs up his traps and goes.
Just hit the road, Jack.
Don't you come back.
And
no
don't
more,
you come
no
back
more,
no more.
More, no more. Thank you very much, Patricia, for getting
Have
us started today. Robert from Manhattan, it appears that you are grieving.
Hi.
Are you?
Hi. First of all, I want to say I hope you feel better from all the prodding and poking. And I would like, and I wish you the best. I'm very sorry to hear about your condition. The other thing I'd like to say is I'd like to answer a question you asked last week, but I didn't get a chance to get on the phone with you. And it was what it means that America is a Judeo-Christian nation. All it means is that a large segment of the population believes in the Ten Commandments. It means nothing else, that we have common values in the Ten Commandments, which have been eliminated from schools. So my suggestion for education is eliminate the first three, which is the objectionable part to atheists that deal with God, but leave the last seven, which deal with man-to-man and man-to-woman relationships. Now, with regard to Cuomo, I'm not sad to see him go. He acted completely like a tyrant. And the purpose of this exit, you might want to call it a gracious exit, a cynical exit, is to keep the spotlight off the worst crimes that he committed. like leading to the deaths of so many thousands of senior citizens and depriving the people of New York of now proven therapeutics that heal and prevent COVID, like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and chlorine hydroxide. He banned those. We used to be able to get hydroxychloroquine over at Duane Reade, but there has been a conspiracy against the American people involving COVID to dominate us, to make us submit, and to change our nature and our relationships with each other. They are trying to turn us all against each other. And the worst thing yet was de Blasio last week coming out to announce COVID passports. This is reinstituting segregation. And my objection to the unconstitutionality of what he's doing is that it is against federal segregation laws. He is trying to create two classes of people, vaxxed and unvaxxed, and he's trying to turn us against each other. We are not each other's enemies. This is a cover. They're trying to blame vax people for the failure of the vaccine, as they call it. It's not a vaccine. It's genetic modification engineering technology. And right now in Israel, which forced most of its population, over 90%, to get vaccinated, they are having critical conditions. 90% of the people in Israeli hospitals, plural, are fully vaccinated. 85% of the people in critical condition in Israeli hospitals are fully vaccinated. It was a ruse. Everyone has to wake up. This is a global genocidal program against the people of the earth. We've known.
I want you to come back to the question of
Cuomo.
Cuomo, and what, in your view, everybody has a role once they're elected. You know, you kind of put a marker there, and you begin to measure how history goes once they're there. How would you remember Cuomo's term? How would it be remembered, you think?
Oh, I think that no one will ever think of anything but the lockdown and the deaths of the senior citizens. As I said, this exit is to take the spotlight off of him because a very famous reporter, the weather lady, Janice Dean, both of her in-laws died as a result of his edict, his mandate. And she was not allowed to visit her in-laws, her husband's parents. Now, I'm going to broach a very serious subject here. I mentioned the word conspiracy. It makes no sense what Cuomo did. He ordered no autopsies be performed. No one could attend a dying relative. No funerals. And when they had interment, you had to stay 60 feet away from the hole in the ground. Refrigerator trucks outside hospitals. This smacks to me of a huge operation, and I believe that it involved organ harvesting. People thought that that was really crazy, but about 3 months ago, a man died in Michigan, and he had had a transplanted lung, and the lung that had been transplanted was COVID-infected lung. We are dealing with something beyond our ken. People are loath to believe that there could be such evil on the planet Earth. But they have been telling us, especially Bill Gates. Bill Gates has been telling people since 2014, 2015, that it was necessary to reduce the world population and that he had a way of doing it. He claimed that he could reduce the world population by 15% by 2025 with vaccines. Now, when you hear 15%, we're talking about a dollar, it's 15 cents. Now, let me make the math easy. There's 7.8 billion people on Earth, and Bill Gates was talking about eliminating 15% of them.
You're all over the place. I want you to stay on topic, please, because
okay,
we will be
Cuomo,
getting
Cuomo
a little bit
retiring.
Of everything, and
okay.
We
well,
will
Cuomo's retiring.
Have come out away with a specific, your specific analysis of the significance of Cuomo in office.
Okay, I think that he is being sacrificed by the Democratic Party to keep attention off worse things that he's done, quite simply stated. That's what I think. Okay. And I will never remember Cuomo in any other context than sending people to their deaths in the nursing homes and depriving people of therapeutics and prophylactics when we could have saved. 15,000 people died in the nursing homes, but about 40,000 people died in New York. And he's responsible. He denied us the therapeutics and the prophylactics. And that's being proven every day as people are recovering through the use of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and many other things. And let's not leave out Fauci, because Fauci was the...
We're not talking about Fauci for the moment. We're talking about Cuomo.
Said that it's to cover up worse things in his background. And I will never remember Cuomo without remembering the lockdown.
Thank you so much.
You're
welcome. 888-874-4888. We are remembering, in a way, the great governor of the state of New York, the son of a great governor of the state of New York. We're remembering the term of Andrew Cuomo as he gets ready to make his exit. Nikki from the Bronx, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. I was just saying, may God bless you and heal your body.
Thank you.
And keep your spirits up. You're a wonderful person. I love your voice. It's very soothing. For me, as far as Cuomo, in all honesty, I didn't really get to know him until last year. And, you know, he was on our screen every day. And quite frankly, I was thankful for it because we also had Trump, and he was horrible. And he gave me a sense, at least, of leadership and hope. And at that time, people were hailing him to be a hero, really, because they were looking. He had a panel, which is what we should have. I agree with the gentleman before. You know, a discussion that's open, scientists and everything. So I felt the way he handled that was what we needed. And I don't know if people remember, he was going to Trump to get stuff, and he would have a closed door all the time. And, you know, when Trump wanted to send the troops to New York and all that stuff, and he said no. So, you know, he deserves credit in how he handled that. And by the way, women were flirting with him. I remember that very clearly. And I just feel like this is not a balanced conversation, regardless of other things. And I don't believe all those women, you know, to say that, oh, we believe him just like that. You know, I don't think there's a balance here. He does deserve to be heard. You know, it's more than him. It's like you're innocent before proven guilty. And I think already it was slanted, you know, the way this campaign went on about him, you know, and I'm Puerto Rican and black folks and Italian, we're very touchy-feely. And if you don't like it, you say, hey, you know, some people speak with their hands and I don't like it. I said, please don't touch me. So, I mean, a lot of these women flirted with him. You know, he didn't flip the script and say, oh, you're sexually abused. You know, I just think there's more to this than is being seen. And Trump has something against him, like a lot. A lot of people want to see him hang, let's put it that way. And look at him. He openly said, I'm talking about Trump now, that I grab pussies, excuse me, and I could do anything I want with them. You know, and these women still voted for Trump. So I just think there's a lot of layers to this, and I don't trust it. Every woman that's claiming sexual harassment, I don't trust them.
But even so, he has now pretty much acknowledged that his conduct was reprehensible toward women.
But he said that all along. He's been saying that, though, but he hasn't had that much play.
How about the fact that
he said, if I offended anyone, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but, you know, you're a grown man. And worse, you're a lawyer. And worse, you're a governor. And worse, you're the son of a governor. You know these things. You can't tell me that all of a sudden it comes to you that, well, I didn't behave well. I should have behaved myself differently. You're a grown man. You did
it. He said that, and I don't know if we were listening to the same thing, because he said that, and he said, I now know differently, because he said it was endearing, like he meant it in an endearing way. I mean, you see photos of him even kissing men, you know? It's like, I do believe, I'm sorry, that's my opinion, and I'm entitled to it, that is built into him.
Nobody's telling you
whether it was correct in a business atmosphere. Whether it was correct in a business atmosphere, I agree. But I don't say that it's sexual harassment. I think
yes, it is. And I'll tell you why it is sexual harassment. It is defined. Sexual harassment is defined by law. What is he? He's a lawyer. He ought to know. And if he doesn't know, he had more than enough credible access to people who do know and who would have counseled him that behavior was unacceptable. Instead, he continued to behave in a manner that was very embarrassing for his office and for himself. We can't accept that a governor suddenly does not know how to behave or the law and what the law means when you're a lawyer.
He made me do a selfie. You know, they only took like sound bites of one part of the conversation, but she was giggling and carrying on with him. So, when he says, do you love me? They only put that part. But on PRN, I heard the whole thing. You know, he was, hello, who's this? Is this the governor? And she was laughing at it. So I'm just saying, people also are responsible to say, hey, I don't like that. You know, they were also flirting. That's what I'm saying.
But in a situation
where you
look at people,
I don't think society is fair. When a man flirts, it's bad. But when a woman flirts, that does happen.
No, I understand that it does. I understand that it does. Just the same, he's a governor. He has more sway. He has greater accountability than another person because he has the highest office in the state. He bears the burden of protecting the integrity of his office and of his own integrity. And he didn't. And he had several opportunities to realize that these were not good ways to conduct himself personally and that it would land him in trouble. He just didn't give a damn and was brazen enough to think, well, I'm the governor. What are you going to do to me? Well, you see what they could do to you.
I don't see it that way.
I see.
I think people could take things out of context too.
I'm sorry?
I mean, what do you say about Trump? He's supposed to be like the president of the United States.
When people do that,
horrible.
It really is annoying. We're talking about him. I'm not talking about Trump.
I know, Trump, but do you see that there was a constant campaign about this, sexual that? I'm just saying the balance of that is that he had a right to say how it was for him and what. I'm just saying the other side of it is important,
too. He had a right to say what was for him, the experience was, and everybody agreed. He's a liar. Everybody agreed he was wrong.
And you don't think some of those women didn't lie?
That's
not
the point.
They got the propaganda of assuming that
women
were
responsible. The point was, you're the governor. You have the top job in the state. If you don't know, then who is supposed to know? If you don't know what the law is and you don't abide by the law, then, as they say, you takes your chances, you suffers the consequences. This is outrageous that people are still trying to find out how to excuse rotten behavior. Not only is it personally rotten behavior, it is legally rotten behavior. For his office, it's rotten behavior. He can't make a credible argument to the contrary here. He can't say, well, they tempted me. You're a grown man.
Ma'am, I'm saying being friendly is a good thing, but someone else might interpret it as sexual harassment. That's all I'm saying, that sometimes it's a very fine line, and that's why sexual harassment is supposed to stay unwanted
behavior. Let's go with your theory. Sometimes
I'm talking about unwanted behavior. You're supposed to speak up.
How often are you going to use that as a defense? Is it harassment every time? Is in this case with Cuomo, there were at least 11 women. All 11 were wrong to suggest that, you know, he attacked them. That this was really an instance of sexual harassment, and he was the victim. Come on now.
I am not saying that at all, at all. I'm just saying some things are so built inside of you, you may slip up. We're not human beings. That's all I'm saying.
And then I understand all of that.
And then someone might take that to another level. That's all I'm saying.
I understand what you're saying, but you insist on overlooking what is staring you in the face. He's no ordinary guy. He's a lawyer. He's the head of the state government. He's the son of a governor. These things should be second nature in his thinking, because very often this is how people get sidelined. They make poor judgments. And then they get caught. And then they want to start making all kinds of arguments about it. No. You behave like a rascal, you get what you deserve. Sometimes it works like that. Sometimes it has to work like that, because that's the way it was.
Well, you don't think we live in that kind of environment you might say something that it was okay, and then all of a sudden it's not okay. Now it's harassment. I'm just saying sometimes
too. Tell you what, because there's a law. I keep talking about it. There is a thing called the law. You're a lawyer. And if you do nothing else as you win election and you come into the office of governor of the state of New York, if you do nothing else, you enroll in a one-person classroom where you are taught or retaught or retaught the law, because this could very well be an obstacle for you, and you ought to know it. When you've done, and they categorized it, 11 women who came forward, and they all tell the same story. You know, is it your position that they're all lying? They're all exaggerating?
I said that I don't trust that all of them are telling the truth. No, I don't. And that is my position.
It's not about whether you trust it or not. It's about whether, according to the law, they can establish a credible case. It appears that they could, and they did. And he himself is not saying, well, I didn't do it. He's making a kind of nuanced argument.
Well, actually, he went by example each time that an occurrence happened, he tried to explain it. Yes, he did try to do that.
Yeah, well, here's the thing.
He was telling his side to it.
I'm just worried
about guilty before proving, you know, innocent before proven guilty. That's all I'm worried about. Michael Jackson. Everybody wanted to hang
in. There are holes in it, but guess what? He was caught. And he had no credible explanation for his behavior. All he could say was, well, I failed to understand the enormity of my actions. Well, okay, understand it now. Understand it now. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate your points, but in the end, he is totally responsible. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Chief. Glad to hear you feeling better.
Good afternoon, Ed.
Glad to hear you feeling better. I'm of your camp when it comes to Andrew, the younger Cuomo. I'm not sad to see him go. You can't be governor for life, no matter what you think. I mean, he did some good things. He was a bully. He was abrasive. He represented the old style politics, three men in a room. And the only lesson that I could really take away from this is you got to keep an eye on Albany. We got to make sure that the old guard doesn't step in and take over, like how they dismissed David Patterson when he was stepped into the fray after Switzer had to resign. Will this lieutenant governor, will she be powerful enough to actually change the dynamics of old Albany politics? The three men in the room, the governor being more like a monarch than an actual politician. It could be a time for great change in New York, but we got to be vigilant. Got to take this opportunity to push the Democrat with the small d, the legislature, the people, to force them to represent us, to get the real estate concerns out of New York, to concentrate on the housing issue, to concentrate on the homelessness issue, to concentrate on the healthcare and education issues that are coming up in the event of the second, third wave of COVID. These are the things we have to concentrate on. I mean, Cuomo's legacy is what it is. He was a tyrant. He had political connections, and he threw his weight around. And sometimes that comes back to bite you in the butt.
As they say, yes, it do. And it did for him, because a large part of this is the arrogance of authority. I got it. I have it. I own it. I can do whatever I want. I am immune to any attempts to rein me in. And we've seen this happen so many times. It happened with his father, except that his father was smart enough to at least give himself a working legal argument for some of the things that he did that were wrong. And he was smooth about it.
Yeah, well, his father was a political genius. He had pros. He elevated politics in New York to a level that I don't think anyone could compare with. He was smooth. He was elegant. And if he did do dirt, it didn't stick. Cuomo, his son, didn't get that finesse. Mario Cuomo had finesse. My father knew Mario Cuomo. And when I was a child, I used to go to rallies with him, and I even met Mario Cuomo. And he had a presence. He had a personality and a charisma that allowed you to overlook the funk. Andrew didn't have that. He didn't have that. So, I mean, with that being said, like I said, we got to look towards the future. We got to put more fear in these political officials so they don't feel so demagogic. We've got to put the fear of service into them. Got to make them like Nixon was. You know, Nixon got out of Vietnam and did what he did because he was afraid of the people. And it was in his memoirs. He said, you know, he was telling Kissinger in the White House, listen, we got to do something because they're going to come in here and get us. That's what all these politicians need to fear. They need to be afraid of the people they serve to make them do what they need to do. And with that being said, have a good life, Andrew.
He will continue explaining how he was ignorant, socially ignorant and callous. He was just not unknowing. He wasn't thinking right. Well, get out of here with that. enough already. Thank you, Ed. Thanks for your call today. Steve from New York, you're on the air. What have you to share about your soon-to-be former governor?
Yeah, I agree with the guy that was before. He took the words out of my mouth. So, but the thing I wanted to say, Al, is the elephant in the living room is that he killed all those old people. And so that's really,
that
to me,
not
the main thing. Like whether the sexual harassment, that's just a smokescreen maybe
wait
or whatever.
Minute,
but he
it's
did
not
that.
The best
and
way to
that's why
hello.
He should.
Hello, hello. It is not the correct way to say that he killed all those people. You can't say that. That's a very heavy charge.
He made the wrong decision in his position, and they died, so whatever. I don't mean that. Like he killed, he went personally and killed each person. But what he did made people die. If all his decisions, even everything that he did with the whole lockdown and everything, he made all wrong decisions. And then people died from that. So if it was in the 1700s, he would have tarred and feathered him or something, you know. Instead, he goes away and then they just put the sexual harassment so he could just quietly go to his vacation home and leave. But meanwhile, he did all those just bad decisions. OK, I'll put it like that. Bad decisions, but really bad. That's why they even have a thing was like if you kill somebody by accident, you still get in trouble. So whatever he did, that's really, maybe that's why he's leaving, because that's the real thing they're after him for. And then they just put the sexual harassment thing to get him to escape or whatever. So.
Okay, I can appreciate your point.
No, the first guy that was talking, I liked what he was saying.
What did he say at first?
For his name.
That he liked.
I don't remember the guy's name. In other words, he has more problems than that, than just the sexual harassment is minor compared to all the other stuff that he did. Like complete incompetent.
Could you appreciate the point that it may be minor, but it is what they could nail him on, and therefore it is it becomes a viable charge. Certain things.
No, it's a viable charge. No, I don't. I'm not saying that. No, viable charge.
No, I'm saying, could you appreciate
but
the argument?
I think that the real thing is, just like they got people on tax evasion or whatever, and then that's what they use. But meanwhile, the guy's a criminal and he's a murderer. And so they get him on tax evasion for the loophole to get him to leave. But he really needs more punishment than what he got. In other words, whatever he's
what
leaving,
what would that be in your view? What would the punishment be?
Well,
that
treason, according to the Constitution, treason. He's treason to me. Actually, treason is still on the books of hanging. I'm not saying.
But how
hang,
is
but
how was
treason,
he?
He's a traitor to the country.
How could you make that argument?
Go off to his vacation
and make it stick.
And just do whatever. I don't know. So that's it. I'm just.
Okay. The point I'm making is when you make a charge, you personally, when you make a charge, you should have at the ready your reason, a very good reason, and you can prove, you know, with some degree of logic that this is how I went. I went from here to there, and this was my conclusion based on my examination of the charge. But you're just putting things out there, and you expect people to say, okay, you're right.
Yeah, but he did make the people not in the nursing home,
Okay.
He didn't give them the correct medicine and stuff like that. He put them in another place. That's a look, I don't have all the information right now, but it's a true fact that he... I mean, even on Gary Noel, he says the same thing, that he was negligent. And what I'm trying to say is that his crimes are more than just the sexual harassment. He did a lot of other things
Yes.
That's all I'm trying to say. So I'm saying.
I'm saying that when you raise an issue, when you raise the issue, you should be prepared to back it up. And you're raising issues today, left and right, but you have nothing to back it up. So you don't come across as credible. Your argument doesn't come across as credible. So that's one thing you have to pay attention to. When you make very serious charges, when you say things that are very, very important like this, you have to be prepared to illustrate your point with facts, which you haven't done today. I think you could agree to that.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
I don't
well,
have the
just
exact
pay attention
details.
To that in the future, that when you make a charge, you also have something to offer that people can say, oh, I see how he could come to that conclusion. That helps a great deal. It helps your argument a great deal when you are able to do that. Thanks for calling in today and contributing.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, all. You know, as I think about this whole case, I could certainly not defend those charges that were made against him if they've proved to be true. So I won't touch that at all. But what comes to my mind as I think about this whole situation is that a person like Cuomo, all I'd have to do, I'd look at the facts. Who gave him all those millions and millions of dollars to run for election? And to me, that says a lot to who he owes allegiance to. So, you know, I don't think if I'm thinking about what's going on in the governor's mansion, and I would think about how good a person was who sat in the governor's chair and got millions and millions of dollars from real estate interests and financial organizations, companies, banks, and so forth. So as far as I'm concerned, any governor that gets that type of support, he doesn't work for me. And we see that now in many of the neoliberal things that are in effect, what they have done to public school teachers, how they're supporting charter schools, how they have done some terrible things to the teachers in New York, with tenure and things like that, and that's all under Governor Cuomo's administration. The other thing about the thing with the not the women that made those charges against him, but in general, it's been my observation and experience to notice that anyone that's in a position of being a celebrity, no matter who it is, has flocks of people coming after them. So, you know, as no surprise, it's very surprising that anyone would put themselves into that position that he did, where he would harass these women with these charges that have been made against him. When if you're in the celebrity status or even less, you can have flocks of people coming after you. You don't have to do those types of things that he did. So that's my observation, and that's the way I look at it.
All right. And we leave it right there. We've come to the end of our program today. I'm glad that we were able to get from all these different people a sense of how the governor's soon-to-be retirement from office, how it affected them. What did they see in it all? And they can bring it to our attention as they did. That brings us to the end of our program today. Let's hook up again tomorrow and do some more talking. Thanks so much for contributing. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back with each other tomorrow. Stay tuned. Coming up next. Who's coming up next? Let me see here from my notes. You know, you have to always have your notes handy when you start getting old because you never remember things. Let's see what's coming up next. Oh, I wrote it down just to make sure. Ralph Nader is coming up next with the Ralph Nader Radio Hour, of course. So stay tuned for that, and we'll talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.